Okay, welcome everyone. Looks like Gloria Marina just got on as well, and Susan too, and Erwin. Okay, and Toby. Looks like everybody is on. I mean, I'm sure there's more people who might join us as well. Now, like I said last time, Hazorim Bedima Barina Yixoru, you're so in tears, but you'll be able to reap the fruits of your labor and song. Now, Chas v'Shalom to say that we didn't enjoy the first blot, the first daf of Megillah, but let's call a spade and say it was a little bit of a technical introduction. And as I said, it would separate the men from the boys and the women from the girls. But thank God, it looks like we all persevered. And now the Gemara is going to throw us a bone. We are going to have Agadita actually right now. And later in the Gemara, we're going to have what I guess you would say is like a cross between Agadita and Halacha. So we're no longer talking about, at least for now, we're not talking about what date to read the Megillah on, all those things that we got really, our heads were spinning from last time. We're going to start talking about translations of Tanakh. Now, as we might be familiar, the most common translation, as we'll see, well, actually, let's just jump right into it rather than me tell it to you outside. So we're on Gimel Amud Aleph, that's 3a. I would imagine the art scroll is still on the first page. We are starting with the Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah. Okay? The Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah. It is
3A.
six lines down from the top on 3a. Yes. So I would imagine it's 3a to the first power. Here we go. Now, the reason we're going to bring this in is because the conclusion at the end of the Gemara has a similar answer that we were left with last time in our previous sugya, and I'll make the connection when we get there. Targum shel Torah mipi Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yeshua. So the Targum, if we just remember to mute ourselves if possible. The Targum for the Torah is Unkelus. Okay, you open up your typical art scroll stone Chumash in Shul. Even that, even though it doesn't have Ramban, it doesn't have Ibn Ezra, it doesn't have Rishbam, it has Unkelus, its translation on the side. And those who are following in our daily Pinyan Halacha, we talked about Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum. So there, Unkelus is very important for that because that's the Targum. That is the quintessential translation for the Torah. Albeit it's in Aramaic because that's what they spoke back then. Not so helpful for most of us today. My ironic observation for the mitzvah of Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum is that one might actually use the Mikra as a Targum for Unkelus rather than Unkelus as a Targum for the Mikra, based on what we know nowadays. Anyway. And Targum and the Targum, the translation into Aramaic of Sifrei Nevi'im, of the works of prophets, that is from Yonasan ben Uziel. Now, this Gemara is important because supposedly there's also a translation of Yonasan ben Uziel on Chumash, but the Gemara doesn't tell us that. And many academics believe that the Targum Yonasan on Chumash is actually Targum Yerushalmi. And so when they found the manuscript, it's had Tuf Yud, Rashi Tevos, Tuf Yud. They assumed it was Targum Yonasan, but some academics believe it's a Targum Yerushalmi. So it might not be the same guy. Make of it what you will. And that's okay, by the way. It's okay to believe that. The Gemara only claims that Yonasan translated Nevi'im. They didn't say he translated the Torah. Okay. So what happened after Yonasan ben Uziel translated the works of the prophets? V'nizdaza Eretz Yisrael arba meos parsa, arba meos parsa. There was a huge earthquake. There's a huge tremor that went throughout the land of Israel when that happened. Yatsa bas kol va'amram. And a heavenly voice came out of heaven and said, "Mihu zeh shegilas Yisrael libnei Adam? Who was the man who revealed my secrets to other human beings?" Amar Yonasan ben Uziel al Ragla va'amar. Yonasan ben Uziel got up and he said, Ani hu shekilisi sisrecha b'nei adam. I was the one who revealed your secrets to humanity. And why did I do it? Golev yodula v'necha Hashem. You know why I did it. Shelo lichvodi asisi. I didn't do it for my honor. Velo lichvod beis Abba. I didn't do it for my family's honor. El lichvodecha. I translated Sifrei Nevi'im for your honor, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lichvodecha asisi. Shel yirbu machlokis be Yisrael. Because what's happening, people are reading their Sifrei Nevi'im. They mistranslate words in there. It leads to huge machlokis. People have utter disagreements just in understanding basic pshat, basic understanding of Sifrei Nevi'im. Who knows what kind of theological misconceptions it leads them to because of these mistranslations. And therefore, I translated it. And it's important, by the way, to know the translation of words. I remember, don't ask me how I see these things on Facebook, but there was this guy who was like a Hillel rabbi, a rabbi from some other seminary who worked at a Hillel. And I don't know if you guys, you know, you guys probably didn't see what I saw, but if those who are on Facebook and have young people my generation who are more to the left on these things, so after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, all these people were like giving these tributes to her, like she was like, you know, Nafla Teres Roshenu, the Gadol Hador has passed away. And some guy tried like making this whole entire drusha about how she subverted her destiny. And he based on, some, I forgot exactly what some medrash, but he really mistranslates, really her destiny was subverted, which had the exact opposite of what he wanted to say. And then someone pointed out, yeah, you mistranslated a word. Your drasha actually says something really bad about the person that you're trying to praise. And he tried to recover from it, but it wasn't pretty. So knowing how to translate words are very important. Otherwise, it could lead us to catastrophic conclusions. Va'od, b'kish l'gaos tarnishom tzum. So yeah, Hashem said, all right, I accept your point. You did it for my honor. Begrudgingly, so to speak, if we, you know, we could attribute such personality to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the sake of the story, Hashem reluctantly allows the Sifrei Nevi'im to remain translated. Yonasan ben Uziel says, okay, you know, give an inch, take a foot. He wanted now to translate the Sifrei Ksuvim as well. He wanted to translate all the third section of Tanakh. V'obikish l'gaos targum shel Ksuvim. God said, you've done enough already. You're translating the VM. Don't try, you know, quit while you're ahead. My time, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu not let him, if he did such a good job translating the VM, why not let him translate Suvim? The answer is, Mishum de Ispe Kates Mashiach. Because in, excuse me, in the Suvim, in that third section of Tanakh, in Suvim, specifically, Rashi points out in Sefer Daniel, one who interprets it correctly can figure out when Mashiach will come and the details surrounding it. And similar to how we learned recently, the Yaakov Avinu wanted to reveal to his sons, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not allow him. So too over here, Yonasan ben Uziel had the power to reveal to everyone, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Dayecha, quit while you're ahead. So that's the history behind Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. But let's go back for a moment to the Targum of Uncleus. You see, Uncleus is after, well, obviously he's after Tanakh. So Uncleus, you know, this is going to be an issue. Targum Shel Torah Uncleus Hagir Amro, Famarav Ikabar Abed, Amarav Chanal, Amarav. Might have said. So what pasuk are we quoting right now? You think Uncleus was the first guy to translate the Torah into Aramaic? If you look all the way in Sefer Nehemiah preceding Uncleus Hagir, we see that they already knew a translation for the Torah. How do we see that in Sefer Nehemiah? By Yigur b'Sefer Torah Elohim Mufurash b'Som Seichel b'Avina b'Mikra. So we see from this verse as follows. We learn something from each word. By Yikru B'Sefer Torah Selokim, Zem Mikra. This refers to reading the Torah. Mefurash, the word mefurash, zeh targum. The word mefurash in the pasuk means they knew how to translate the Torah. V'som seichel, elu hapsukin. They knew also where psukim began and ended, because when you learn Torah, one of the difficulties isn't, well, obviously, is knowing the trup, the cantillation, but on a more basic level, you have to know where a pasuk starts and where a pasuk ends, where a sof pasuk is. You're right. Well, who do we got? We got like Henry over here, who's one of our laners. If any other laners here who want to shout out, Judd, are you a laner also? I forgot. Yeah. Okay. So I need to give credit where it's due. Via Vina Bamikra, Elu Piske Tamim. This refers to cantillation. We knew cantillation as well. Va'amrila Ela Mesor. Some say this refers to Chaseros Viseros. You'll see that there's different versions of how words are written, Chaseros Viseros. We don't need to elaborate on that. What's the question here? It's very clear to us that before Unculus came around, we already had a translation of the Torah. So what did Unculus add that we, you know, it's almost like I have the article translation to Gemara already. Why do I need Koren to come along and give me a translation? You know, it's different. But anyone using Koren, did I just insult any Koren people?
Rabbi.
What was that?
I just wanted to ask a question. Are we separating the word translate to mean so that you can read it or so that you can understand it?
Ah, very good. So what Phil is pointing out is when you look at a targum, you look at a translation of something, as we'll see next Monday night when we talk about Lo Yilvash, about cross-dressing, and actually we'll see in the Gemara in a moment, many times targumim aren't just giving you a literal translation of the verse, but they're also giving a pirush. They're helping you understand what the verse says. So we're going to see, for instance, this Monday night, we'll do the Shir and Lo Yilvash finally, that Targum Rabbeinu Yonasan, it says in a pasuk, a woman shouldn't have clay gever. She shouldn't have the same utensils, the same articles of clothing that a man has. Targum Yonasan Menuzil adds into the pasuk there, meaning a woman shouldn't wear tzitzis and tefillin. It doesn't say that in the Torah. But as a targum, he added in the ideas that are between the lines, or at least as he sees it.
But so, Unculus doesn't do that.
Unculus does it much less frequently. But you will find, I'm not thinking of a precise instance, where Unculus departs from the literal translation. And usually when he departs from the literal translation, that because he doesn't do it as frequently, it indicates something important. And you'll see Rashi will point out sometimes. You'll see Rashi's oral plan when Unculus departs.
Okay. I just thought that his translation was just to into a different language, not with any explanation at all.
Usually that's how he is. He's much less liberal about adding in things between the lines, but you will see he will depart from literal translation. And that's when it's important.
But what's the question here?
So the question is as follows. It seems we already had an explanation. We already had a targum in the Torah. What did Unculus add? The answer is shichachum v'chazer v'yastum. They had a translation. Whatever it means, they began to lose it. They lost parts of the translation. They lost some of the explanations. Unclear to me precisely what they forgot. But Unculus came back and he reestablished the translation and he made sure that everything was clearly documented. And now we know why this entire sugya was brought in. Because remember last time we were talking about how, about the endemem, the endachaf, we're talking about the letters that go at the end of a word. And we said, what do you mean? Nevi'im are not allowed to make up new rules for letters. The Torah has to stay the way it always was. So we answered at the end of that Gemara, shichachum v'chazer v'yastum, that we forgot the rules, and then the Nevi'im reminded us what the original rules were. So similarly over here, Unculus reminded us what we already knew. So that's why we brought this all in. It's a similar answer to what we had earlier in the sugya. Now, I want to get to your point, Phyllis, about how these translations are not just translations literally, but they actually will add things between the lines. And here's a case in point. Maishna Doraisa Delo is Daza Vyadanavi is Daza. So why is it that when we Yodasem ben Uziel translated the works of the prophets, there was this huge cataclysmic earthquake, and you know, God was ready, I don't know, he was gonna destroy the world, but clearly God was very angry. God was not happy about that. But why is it that when Unkelus translated the Torah, nothing happened, you know? Nobody batted an eyelash, nothing happened. So the reason is, Doreis Mefarsha Milsa, the Torah, translation of the Torah is much more straightforward. God's not trying to hide anything in there. If you could translate it well with basic understanding of Chazal, you'll understand what's going on. In the works of the prophets, there's certain ideas that are meant to remain hidden in there, right? The Torah, we need Chazal, we need our Rishonim to help us understand the Torah, but nothing in the Torah really is supposed to be hidden from us. There's certain ideas, for instance, such as the bring, you know, when Mashiach is supposed to come, you know, okay, that was Ksuvim, that are supposed to remain hidden in the Sifrei Neviim. And when Yonas and Benuziel started translating it, God said, I don't want you revealing that which I decided to deliberately hide from people. That's what God said. God said, let's see, what did he say? Mihu zeh shegila sisarai livnei adam. Who revealed that which I hid from man? So that's the distinction. And here's a good example of where Yonas and Benuziel shed light on something that we would not have understood otherwise. It says in Zechariah that on that day, there were many eulogies. They began, eulogies increased to Yula and Yerushalayim, like the eulogies of Dad Rimon in Bikas Megiddo, in the Valley of Megiddo. Vamar of Yosef, now, had I not had Targum Rabbeinu Yonas and Ben Uziel, I would not know what's going on, because nowhere else in Tanakh do we have a mentioning of this guy called Dadrimon who was doing something in Bikas Megiddo. It's a nice rhyme, Dadrimon Bikas Megiddo. So what does Targum Rabbeinu Yonas do? How does he explain the Pasuk? I never heard this guy before. What's the Torah, what's Zechariah referencing? The Yomahu Yaski Mispada Yerushalayim can Mispada the Achabar Amri the Kotel Yossi Hadad Rimon Bentav Rimon Baramos Gilad Ucha Mispada the Yoshia Bar Amo the Kotel Yossi Parachagira the Bikas Megiddo. What does Yonas ben Uziel add in for us? He says on that day eulogies began to increase, like the eulogies for Achav, King Achav, we do know about, who was killed by Dadrimon in Ramos Gilad. Ah, now we have an explanation. Who's this Dadrimon guy? He's the guy who kills King Achav, King Ahab, who we know about. So had Yonas and Uziel not come along, I'd have no idea who this Dadrimon guy is that Zechariah is referring to. Comes Yonas ben Uziel and tells us that Dadrimon was the guy who killed Achav. And when it says that there were many eulogies, it's referring not to the eulogies of Dadrimon, but the eulogies that were caused by Dadrimon's act of killing Achav. Very good. And that's a great case in point where the Targum does not give just a literal translation, but adds in necessary details between the lines that we would otherwise not be able to understand certain psukim in the Torah. Very good.
And they know that from where? They how do they know?
There are two answers to that. One is they had a tradition. The other answer is Ruach HaKodesh. I'll let you decide which one.
I knew about that one.
I mean, that's what I was always told in school. How did Rashi know to write certain things? He had Ruach HaKodesh. I mean, it happens to be most things that Rashi writes, he has citations from the Sifrei, he has Midrashim and Gemaras he cites. So, you know, Rashi will sometimes give like a Dover Achir, he'll give his own idea, but most times Rashi just quoting for us you know, Midrashim, he's quoting other ideas. Okay. Now, since we refer to Sefer Daniel, remember what was important about Daniel? Anyone remember? Daniel, if you understand what he's referring to in there, you can yeah, Toby?
Wall, right?
What?
He saw the things on the wall that nobody else saw, right?
That is true. Okay, so Daniel is known for that writing on the wall.
The future.
What was that, Phyllis?
The future.
Yeah, but for our, right, okay, for future, very good. So for our purposes, we referred to Daniel earlier when we were talking about how if you understand Sefer Daniel, you'll know about the end of days. You'll know a Mashiach will come. So Agav, because we talk about Daniel, we're just going to learn a little bit about him, and then this will cap off this piece of Gemara. Re'isi ani Daniel levadi es hamar v'anoshim asher hayu imi lo ra'u es hamar. So Daniel says, I on my own saw this prophetic vision, and the men that were with me did not see the prophetic, a certain prophetic vision. Avol charado gedola nafla alehem ve'yivarchu be'chavein. Now, rather, they didn't see the vision. Rather, they got scared, and they ran, and they hid themselves. That's the pasuk. Man ninhu anashim. Who are these men that were afraid, did not see the vision, ran away? Amarav Yirmiya v'itema Rabbi Chiya bar Abba zeh Chagai Zechariah Malachi. This refers to the three prophets, Chagai Zechariah and Malachi. Inu adifi minei v'iu adif minei. They were greater than him in certain respects. The Iu adif minei. And Daniel was greater than these three prophets in certain respects. How so? Inu adifi minei. They were greater than him. The Inu nevi'e. The Iu lav navi'ihu. They were prophets and he was not a prophet. What does it mean Daniel was not a prophet? What's he doing in our, you know, in our Tanakh then? So what it means is, you look in Rashi, it says, Shenisnavnu li Yisrael v'shichusa shel makom, means they were sent as prophets to the Jewish people to share a prophecy on the behalf of God. Daniel was not sent to the Jewish people to share a particular prophecy from God. So to a certain degree, they have that advantage over Daniel. Whereas Ihu Adif Minayu, Daniel was superior to these individuals. How so? The Ihu Chazav Inu Lo Chazav, because he was privy to this vision, and Chagai Zechariah Malachi were not privy to this vision. Well, I got a question for you. If they didn't see the vision Daniel was looking at, why did they get scared and run away? If they saw it, it made sense that they ran away because they got scared. But if they didn't see anything, where are they running from? So the answer is, excuse me, even though they couldn't see the vision, their mazel saw the vision. Now, what's their mazel? It's like the angel that is watching them. Unclear exactly what mazel is. You know, we say mazel tov all the time. But mazel is a very interesting concept. Mazel is this idea that there's constellations that tell us our destiny, that different people have their own mazel. In Subos, it talks about how something bad happens and you have to lose money. It's your mazel's fault. So we won't get into that right now. But apparently, even though they physically didn't see something, their mazel saw it. And that's why they became suddenly afraid.
Moshe, can I suggest that they had a sense of foreboding or fear? They couldn't pin down where it came from, but they were afraid.
Right. So they probably had some sort of terror that took them suddenly, and they don't know where it came from. So, you know, there is some psychological element to this, to what degree mazel plays a role. Okay, we'll save that for a Kabbalah class. And this is in accordance with what Rabina taught, that there are things that you might not see, but your mazel can sense them, and that has an effect on yourself. Now, my takante, what is the remedy for someone who is stricken with this terror that he cannot see, but his mazel can sense? Likri Kriya Shema, he should read Kriya Shema, and that will help him. He climbed a mokuma to Nofest, and let's say he's standing in a place that is dirty, there's feces nearby. So then you're not allowed to read Kriya Shema. It becomes a halakhic issue, actually, with children who might have like a dirty diaper and davening with them. And this presents a challenge for me when I bring my daughter to davening in the morning. So I should keep that in mind. So linshov miduch de arba garmide. What you do is move four amos away from the location where that feces or whatever that dirty thing is below. And if you're not able to do that, lema hachi iza hachi iza debay tavche shmeina minai. This goat at the butcher's house is fatter than I am. Meaning there's, you know, shadim, demons, there's something, someone better over there that you could pick on. Now, I don't want to spend too much time elaborating on this. In Arvei Psachim, anyone who's learned Perek Arvei Psachim, it really gets into this a lot. There's really two ways to understand this in general. Either one, Chazal believe that there's certain incantations that you can say to repel evil spirits. The other was, no, this really doesn't help. But Chazal realized that people were superstitious and they needed to suggest some solution to help calm people's nerves. Both ideas are suggested in the literature and you can make of it what you will. But yeah, and Arvei Psachim talks about witchcraft, talks about demons, talks about ways to avoid them. So interesting stuff. All right, that brings us to the end of this section. Let me tell you, from here on out, it's going to be a lot less esoteric, but I think very intellectually satisfying what we're about to look at. So let me give a little bit of an introduction. In general, what I really enjoy about halacha is that it gives direction in complicated areas, such as when the toughest decisions we have in life, and I know I've shared this in drushos in the past, are not between doing good and bad, but between good and good. You know, I have a mitzvah to do chesed, I have a mitzvah to learn Torah. How do I reconcile, you know, what good deed takes priority over the other? And so what we're going to do in the Gemara now is, the Gemara is actually going to try to help make sense of, if I have multiple different kinds of mitzvahs in front of me, how do I determine which one is more important, which one takes priority over the other? In particular, it starts off talking about how the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, of reading Megillah, takes priority basically over almost anything. We'll deal with it more next week if there's anything that could supersede the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. But actually this week we'll see one example of something that supersedes Mikra Megillah. But we're going to talk about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, the mitzvah of working in the Beis HaMikdash, what's more important than the other. So this is going to be a very fun Gemara. I think it's a fun Gemara. You'll tell me what you think at the end. Here we go. So shifting gears, end of that section, moving back to what we were talking about the previous week. Remember the previous week, we said, Vahasha to Amr, Medina, Medina, Ve'ir, Ve'ir, Ledrusha. We learned that the words in the Pasuk of province and province, city and city, come to teach us that a village that is within 1 mil, was it 1 mil? What was our measure? Yeah, within 1 mil of a city, it adopts the status of the city that is nearby. Now, the question is, though, mishpacha, mishpacha, family and family, which is mentioned in the Pasuk, what do we do with those extra words? Why did the Pasuk say families and families? Mishpacha, mishpacha. Lamayasa, what's it come to teach me, this seemingly superfluity in the words? Amar Rabbi Yosef Rechniel, Lohami Mishpachos Kuna Levia, Shemavalan Avoratsu Nobain Lishma Mikra Megillah. It's to teach us that the families of the Kohanim and the families of the Leviim, they stop doing what they're doing in the Beis HaMikdash. They stop performing the service in the temple and they drop what they're doing and they go listen to Megillah when it's the time to hear the Megillah. Damarav Yidamarav, Kohanim Avodas and Leviim Baduchnan, Yisrael Ba'amamadon, Kula Mevatlan Avodas and Ubayin Lishma Mik Megillah. So without getting into too much detail, those who are our Mishnah folks, you might be familiar. There were the Ma'amados. There were people, Kohan, Levim, and Yisraelim. There were 24 shifts throughout the year of when Kohan, Levim, and Yisraelim would be serving on behalf of the rest of Klal Yisrael at the Beis HaMikdash. They could be in the middle of their work. They could be in the middle of their kriyas haTorah, middle of their prayers, whatever it is. They stop what they're doing, and they all listen to the Megillah. Taninami hachi kohan b'avodasan. Ulevim b'duchna b'Yisrael b'mamadon. Kulam b'valen avodasan. Ubayin l'shvan mikra Megillah. Now, what do we learn from this? Mikan samchu shel beis rebbe shem avodan tam b'torah ubayin l'shvan mikra Megillah. Kal v'chomer me'avoda. Ah, so what do we learn from here? The beis rebbe, they said, well, kal v'chomer, if the Kohanim, the Levim, and all the folks working the Beis HaMikdash have to drop what they're doing to hear the Megillah, kal v'chomer, we who are studying Torah should drop what we're doing in order to hear the Megillah. Uma v'rashi chamura mevatlinan, Talmud Torah lo kol shekein. If the avoda, the service of the temple, which is higher, then it's superior to the study of Torah, or higher in terms at least of priority, and yet the avoda, the service of the temple, we're willing to suspend to fulfill the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, kal v'chomer, those who are learning Torah in the Beis Medrash should close their gemaras and come to shul to hear the Megillah be read. Now, what's the obvious question? Where do we see that the temple service is greater than the study of Torah? In fact, the Gemara is about to ask, I have a case in point where we see that Torah study is actually superior to temple service. Where do we see this? From the story of Yehoshua. Vavoda chamur mitalmud Torah, is the temple service greater than the study of Torah? V'ksiv, v'hivios Yeshua v'yaricho, v'yasa eina v'yar, v'yine ish omed l'negdo v'yishtachu. Yeshua ben Nun, he went out, and all of a sudden an angel, before they conquered Yericho, an angel pierced him with a sword drawn. And, well, okay, parenthetical for a moment. V'hechi avid haki, v'arabi Yeshua ben Levi, also adam shiitin shalom l'chabir b'layla, haishina shemashedhu. Why did Yeshua greet this? He didn't know his angel at the time. Why did he greet this man in the middle of the night? He should have been concerned that it was a demon, that it was a shade. Shani hasam damerle keni sartzva Hashem. No, no, no. This man said to Yeshua, I am a servant of the Lord. Therefore, he must not be a demon. Well, don't mishakri. Maybe he lied. You know, why can't he just lie? So, gemiri dilo b'faki shem shemayla batah. We know that Shadim are not able to invoke the name of God in vain. And so, end of parenthetical, Yeshua is approached by an angel of God, Amar Lo, and this angel draws a sword, seemingly ready to kill Yeshua on the spot. And Yeshua says, why do you want to kill me? What did I do? He says, Amish b'taltim tamashil bein arbaim, yesterday, you guys forgot, you guys missed sacrificing the Tamid offering. We pushed it off. And now you have also squandered your time and you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of studying Torah. Amar lo, Yeshua says, well, that's two issues. Al ezim ehen basa, which one are you coming to exact justice upon? The lack of worship or the lack of study of Torah. Amar lo atabasi. I am coming on the issue of the moment, which is the lack of Talmud Torah, the issue of today. So miyad vayon Yeshua b'layahu betocha emek. Yeshua rested that night within the emek, within the valley. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Malame, this is very yeshivish. Shalon ba'umka shahalach. What does it mean? He was resting in the Amek. He was resting and he was involved in studying halacha bi'ian. He stayed the whole night. He's like, oh, I've shirked my responsibility. I've squandered my time not studying Torah. So he stayed up. He made it like a shavuos night. He got some coffee out. He got a whole spread of different food. And he turned into a shavuos night learning megabash. And he learned throughout the entire night, in order to rectify the Bittul Torah. V'amarav Shmuel bar Unya, Gadol Talmud Torah Yosef Me'akavas Tamidin Shemar Tabasi. What do we see from here? We see the fact that the angel came not to exact justice upon Yeshua for forgetting to bring the Karban Tamid, but instead he was makbid on him forgetting to study HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, for neglecting that responsibility. We see from here that if we're weighing the scales, the study of Torah is more significant than the temple worship. So that's the question. How could I make a Kal V'Chomer if the folks in the temple stop what they're doing to listen to Megillah? Kal V'Chomer, the folks in the Beis Medrash should close their Gemaras to hear Megillah. Learning Gemara in the Beis Medrash is more important than temple worship. So that's not a good Kal V'Chomer from what we see. What's the Gemara answer? Lokasho hadarav adiyachid. There's different kinds of Talmud Torah. There's Talmud Torah diyachid, which is before I came to give the shir tonight, I was sitting at my table going through the Gemara learning on my own. That's Talmud Torah diyachid. That's individual learning. Talmud Torah derabim is I'm giving a shir here right now, or I give a shir in the shul, which is a public Torah teaching. That is qualitatively greater than individual Torah teaching. And that actually is also greater than temple worship. So we got to start keeping track. Guys, you got to keep track of the points over here. What's, you know, we need the alligators, you know, like the carrot thing, lesser and greater than. So to keep track, to keep score, what we got so far is that personal Talmud Torah is tier one. Tier two is temple worship. And then there's tier three, which is public Talmud Torah. So public Talmud Torah, actually, because it's more important than the avoda, than temple worship, actually, like, let's say I have a choice. I have a minyan and I have a shir to give. And I wasn't able to cash an earlier minyan. And basically, I either have to cancel my shir or I have to miss minyan and give my shir. So there's a basis, halakhically, to say that I should forgo davening in order to continue giving my shir, because the shir that I'm giving is Talmud Torah Derabin. It's a public Torah learning, and public Torah learning is greater than the avoda. Davening is based on the avoda, on temple worship. The Shemona Esrays that we do, that's in lieu of what we could have been doing in the temple. Like the Musaf that we do is in lieu of the Karban Musaf. So that's what we see from here. Okay, let me pause for a moment. Anything I could clarify?
I got a question.
Yes, Sadie.
The Torah specifically describes the temple service. It's mandatory. It also requires individual learning. I would think you don't give up one for the other, each in its proper time and place. So you get it all in.
Yeah, right. But the issue is when you're not, you know, obviously we try to schedule things in advance. You know, I make sure that my shir is not at the same time as minyan at the shul. But the issue is sometimes we fall into situations where there's conflicts and we have to make decisions on the spot. So that's really where we have to, or Mikra Megillah. Look, you know, you could be learning a base medrash all day, but now it's time to read Megillah. What do you do? Which leads us to our next question. Would the Yagid Kal really, is individual Torah learning really that insignificant that it would not supersede the mitzvah of listening to the Megillah? But it's not. Nashim b'moed ma'anos. So this is basically a Moed Katan talks about different mourning rituals that were done, and certain mourning rituals were not allowed on Yom Tovim. Certain ones were allowed on holidays. So, nashim b'moed ma'anos avalo mitapkos. Women, when it's when it's a moed, when it's a holiday, and they're mourning someone at a funeral, so they're allowed to eulogize in unison, but they're not allowed to do mitapkos. That was like, you know, they're hitting themselves and clapping around. Right, these are different. They used to have professional mekononos back then, professional women who you'd hire to come to to funerals, and they would put on like a whole eulogy show, basically. I don't know if you ever like see like the The video, there's this famous video after, I forget Kim Jong-un's father, whatever, the Korean dictator died. You see like these videos of people in the street like tearing on themselves and clapping al khayt. So that's kind of what I think about when I see this. So back to our feature presentation. Nashim b'moy ma'anos avlo mitapchos. They're allowed to be ma'ana, but they're not allowed to do mitapchos. Rabbi Shmuel Omer ma'ayu smuchos lemita. If they're closer to the coffin, mitapchos, they're allowed to even hit themselves as well. Barashi chadashim b'chanaka b'pur ma'anos mitapchos. Whereas on Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, and Purim, which are lesser holidays, they're even allowed to be ma'anos and mitapchos. And b'zeh u'b'zeh, we have to change the gear, so over here, b'zeh u'b'zeh ain't a makonos, but they're not allowed to be makonin on any of these days. What's it mean to be makonin? Unlike ma'onos, sorry, not ma'onos, unlike ma'anos, where you do it in unison, this is more of a call and response. So most of us here are Ashkenazi. We're not as familiar with call and responses. But you go to a Sephardic service or like a black church, you know, like that's call and response. Someone yells something out and everyone says something back. So that apparently is a higher level of eulogizing, and therefore that's not permissible. However, v'amarav v'arhuna, in moed b'vnei talmud chacham kol shekin chanukah u'purim, there is no moed for talmud chacham, meaning even when there's a moed, but if it's a talmud chacham who passed away, there's no restrictions for how we eulogize them. Certainly on Chanukah and Purim, it would be the same thing as well, that they would not hold back eulogizing for a talmud chacham. What do we see from here? We see that honoring the individual learning of a Talmud Chacham is greater than the mitzvos of Chanukah and Purim. In other words, honoring the individual learning of a Talmud Chacham supersedes Purim, i.e. the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. So why are we selling individual Talmud Torah so short? It seemingly supersedes the mitzvos of Purim, which includes, of course, Mikra Megillah. So we need another category now. The Gemara introduces another category. Kavod Torah Ka'amet. We're not talking about Talmud Torah, about studying Torah here. We're talking about Kavod HaTorah, honoring Torah. Kavod Torah DeYachid Chamor, Talmud Torah DeYachid Kal. The Kavod HaTorah, honoring Torah, is greater and supersedes the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, but study of Torah does not supersede the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. And that's actually why, you know, you ever wonder, isn't it Bittul Torah? If I'm in the middle of studying Torah, why should I go to a funeral of a gadol? Actually, you're supposed to close your Gemara, and if a gadol hador, a great rabbi, passed away, you go to that funeral. It's not Bittul Torah. Why? Because kavod Torah, honoring a Torah, is greater than the study of Torah, which is important because many people who don't study Torah, at least we have to honor the Torah. I don't need to preach to you guys because you guys are already doing Talmud Torah, but Rabbi, many people fail to internalize that even if they're not studying Torah, at very least they should be giving Kavod HaTorah and honoring Torah. So Rabbi, let me just give you the hierarchy because I was keeping score. I don't know if you guys were keeping a tally. Here is the here are the gradations. Here is the hierarchy. On the bottom, we have personal Talmud Torah, Talmud Torah de Yachid, which is superseded by the temple worship, by the Avodah, which is superseded by Talmud Torah de Rabban, public Torah study, which seemingly is superseded also by Mikra Megillah, by reading the Megillah. And then all the way at the top, we have Kavod HaTorah, we have honoring Torah. Kavod HaTorah supersedes everything. It trumps everything. We're going to talk about some other categories next week, but we'll leave the Gemara over there. Now, I want to ask you guys a very fundamental question. He doesn't hear me. Isn't there something funny about this equation that we made? We have the whole premise we've been working with. that a person can be mevatel Torah, stop learning to hear the Megillah. But isn't the Megillah part of Torah? You know, like if I close my Gemara and I go to hear the Megillah be read, is that really bittul Torah? Is that really squandering and neglecting my responsibility to learn Torah? After all, if Megillah is part of the Torah, then I wasn't really mevatel Torah. You know, if I close my Maseches Megillah and I open up my Maseches Makos to learn, I just went from one area of Torah to another area of Torah. It's not called bittul Torah. That's just shifting from one topic in Torah to another topic in Torah. So what's the whole question of bittul Torah to begin with?
Isn't the difference the point that it's public?
So perhaps
in other words, Megillah reading is public, and said that public learning of Torah takes priority over private learning of Torah.
But it's not. I don't think Mikra Megillah is hearing the Megillah. I wouldn't call that learning, though.
Very good.
You're doing it for Persume Nisa or for other reasons, but right.
Very good. So Toby and Henry, you both are touching on very important points. Let me give you a summary. I mean, there's more to this than I'm sharing with you, but let me give you a brief summary of some of the answers. And Toby and Henry, you guys touched upon it. So, okay, where did I write this down? Okay. So I'll address that point in one moment. There's one other question I wanted to ask, which is related. So in general, by the way, we're mevatel Torah for any mitzvah. Why do I need a proof to stop learning Torah in order to listen to Megillah? In general, we have a rule that if there's a mitzvah that's e'esher latzos ayidei acherim, that cannot be done by anyone else, I have to stop my learning and do whatever the mitzvah is, right? It's time to light Chanukah neiros. So I close my Gemara, I light candles for Chanukah. It's time to have the Pesach Seder. I close my Gemara and I have a Pesach Seder. The Gemara doesn't ask all these questions. The Gemara doesn't ask, what's the proof that I can stop learning Torah in order to have a Pesach Seder? It's understood that when there's another mitzvah, I close my Gemara and I do the mitzvah that I need to do at the moment. So what's the question when it comes to Megillah? So the Chiddush, the Emek Shela says, is that let's say you're in a place where there is a small minyan for Mikra Megillah, but if you get in the car and you drive for 15 minutes, you can get to a good Shalom where instead of 20 people for the minyan, there'll be hundreds of people there ready to listen to the Megillah. So actually what's teaching you is that time that you take to travel in order to hear Megillah with a larger audience, because it's Rav Amhadras Melech, that actually is not Bittul Torah, or at least it supersedes Bittul Torah. And the Chiddush is that Persume Nisa, as you point out, Henry, publicizing the miracle by having a larger crowd hearing the Megillah together, it's not just a Hidur Mitzvah, it's not just enhancing the Mitzvah of Megillah, it's actually part of the Guf. It's part of the very essence of the mitzvah of the Megillah. So that's the Chiddush that we're learning here, that you can even go out of your way and travel to a larger minyan, even if it's at the expense of time that you would have spent learning Torah anyway.
Now, I got a problem with that.
Yeah.
You're depriving that smaller minyan of you, and it's smaller because you're not there.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for that. I was equally disturbed by that same idea, and I didn't see any answers to that. But Zeta, I 100% agree. It's unclear to me, because I would say if there's 200 people here in Megillah in one place and there's 23 people in another, your presence is much more felt in the smaller minyan. So what are you doing depriving your smaller minyan of your presence? 100% Zeta. I don't have a good answer for that one.
The question is in the family genes.
Very good. Now, back to our other question. Mikra Megillah. Is Mikra Megillah actually considered a form of Talmud Torah? So one approach that's given, I think it's quoted in the Beis Ephraim, is that he says, look, the Megillah is not meant for Talmud Torah. Similar to what you were saying, Henry. The Megillah, and we're going to see this on Zion, I'm going to off on 7a whenever we get there, that Megillah's Esther nitna li kaseg, that Esther was given to us to be written down. What's it mean, written down? Meaning, once a year, we dust off the Megillah, we take it out of the closet, and we read it. But otherwise, the Megillah is not given for us. We're not supposed to be spending our time learning the Megillah the rest of the year. So therefore, it's not really an act of Talmud Torah. It's just reading, it's just mikra. To which the Avnei Nezer says, what do you mean? What do you mean it's only meant for one day a year? We're, in Yirtza Hashem, going to be going through the entire tractate, the entire Masechet Megillah together. And Megillah is going to spend a lot of time explaining the psukim, explaining the narrative of Megillah's Esther. If Megillah's Esther is Bittul Torah, if it's not Talmud Torah to be learning and understanding Megillah's Esther on a deeper level, why would Chazal waste all of our time teaching us Maseches Megillah, which is chock full of elucidations and deeper dives into understanding the Megillah? So the Avnei Nezer says, the Chazal teaches all this for nothing? So there's other approaches to it. But I'll give you one more. Based on, it's quoted from Chaim Brisker. And Henry, this might get to your point, which is basically as such. There is Talmud Torah that can be done on a profound level. There's Talmud Torah that can be done on a more superficial level. So when one hears the Megillah read in shul, that is learning on a superficial level, because all you're hearing literally are the psukim. Now, if you went through Maseches Megillah and you know, and you hear psukim, like you're, oh, kasher avadati, avadati. Oh, that means that Esther now is no longer allowed to be with Mordechai because she was Esther and it's adultery. Also, you know, if you think that when you go through Megillah's Esther, great, maybe that's Talmud Torah for you. But most people, they're using their greatest energy, they're using their greatest mental faculties when they're studying a daf of Gemara. But to just go to shul to hear the Megillah be read, that's learning Torah on a more superficial level. And you know what the Chiddush is? The Chiddush is that for one who has the capacity to study Torah on a more advanced level, but they decide to be lazy and they just, you know, want to hear Torah on a superficial level, then that also constitutes Bittul Torah, Reb Chaim says. And so to go hear Megillah instead of studying the Gemara, the Beis Medrash, we needed the Gemara to tell me I was allowed to do that, because otherwise that would be a form of Bittul Torah. To which Toby wants to say something.
Though, that women are command, you know, women have the obligation to go to hear Megillah. They don't have to go to the Beis Medrash.
Very good. Very good.
You're not right about that, is what I'm saying. I mean, it's like, because it's superficial, that's where women get commanded to go.
I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah.
The Megillah is more Afin Hayyupa Oso Anais, because both men and women are included in the miracle. So if women weren't included in the miracle, they wouldn't have to go at all. I don't know what that says. But anyway, I'm thankful that
Rabbi?
Was it Phyllis?
I was trying to get in, but somehow there was something wrong with the sound. What about the fact that the Megillah is only read during certain times, during certain days, and Talmud Torah, you can get back to it anytime, but you can't read the Megillah whenever you feel like it.
Very good. So, Phyllis, what you're pointing out is, and I think of the Stipler in Kilos Yaakov, he explains as such, that what's the reason, you know, we say Talmud Torah connected klum. Talmud Torah, the Stipler Torah is like one of the greatest mitzvahs, one of the most fundamental mitzvahs, perhaps the most fundamental mitzvah in the Torah, is to study the Torah. Everything else comes from that. So how is it that the most fundamental, basic mitzvah in the Torah can seemingly be superseded by almost any other mitzvah? The answer is, when is one obligated to study Torah, he says? When you have a zman panoi, when you have open time. When a mitzvah comes your way, you have to do a Pesach Seder, you have to hear the shofar, whatever it is. So your time, you no longer have free time. But when you have free time, that's when you're obligated in the mitzvah. So that might help explain the dynamic. Anyway, we're at 7:59, so I want to officially call an end to the shiur right now and wish you all a good Shabbos. And I hope you enjoyed tonight's Gemara. I'll stay on for another few minutes for any remaining questions. But as always, I like to call an end before the hour is up. So I've been Yaitze Zion. All right, good Shabbos.
Rabbi?
If anyone wants to stay on, I will address questions the best of my
Rabbi?
I'm staying on.
Hello, Rabbi.
Yes, Phyllis.
We could just use the answer based on what you just said. Mitzvah ba'aliyatcha al tachmitzena.
Oh, yeah. Right. So, right, exactly. Once a mitzvah comes to you, you got to jump on the opportunity right away. You got to put up the sukkah right after Yom Kippur. So, yeah.
So, that's
Matthew.
There, okay. I think they're in, even with the once a year, well, actually twice, once at night and once during the day, the learning of the Gemara, even on the most superficial level, there is a very important lesson, is that when the Jewish people stray from following the mitzvot collectively, we're in deep trouble with Hashem. And it's a story of redemption of the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's important to learn that aspect of it.
Right. And that's why it needs to be done. That's why ultimately why one puts down their Gemara and goes to hear the Megillah be laid.
Exactly. But everybody has to get that lesson.
Yeah, exactly. Men, women, everyone comes and listens to this. Agreed. All right. Shkoyach, everyone. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Thank you.
Phyllis, thank you, Melissa, very much. Erwin, thank you. Alex, and Marina. It's good seeing all of you. And have a wonderful Shabbos, and looking forward to learning again next week with Hashem as well.
Bye. Thank you.
All right. Take care.